Blaine and Mickey, 104.5 The Zone. Happy Thursday to you. You would want to catch our podcast page. Some great stuff earlier today from Jay Binkley, who covers the Chiefs in Kansas City. Really good stuff talking about basically like how the Chiefs get to be 3-3. You basically stop these turnovers.
That's it.
Receivers dropping balls, going through their hands, he said. There's been at least three instances of the 8 interceptions, he said, by Pat. Patrick Mahomes with the ball has just gone through receiver's hands. And
I saw one go through the hands of Tariq Hill.
I think he's got two of those.
I mean, right through, boom, and then a Washington football team intercepted. Mm-hmm. Yep, don't nobody care about it. It went through his hand. It's an interception on Mahomes.
Yeah, 8.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yep, he's not MVP this year. No. Yeah. What happened?
I know you know Andy Reid. Hey, he's got to be looking at the Titans roster right now and saying, okay, so Christian Fulton's not around? Oh, Farley's hurt too, huh? He just started playing. He's hurt again, huh?
Oh, no. He's out for the year.
Yeah. So I'm just going to throw 8 million six-yard passes. All the six-yard. It's going to be like a who's who of six-yard passes.
And then he's going to go double move you over the top. And then you'll be scared out your you know what after that. Mm-hmm. Because then the coaches will be up there hollering, what are you doing? And, you know, the way they go, they'll yank you. It may not have another option. It may have to keep him out there. It may have to trade for somebody. A lot of people talking about that.
Yeah, we had Jordan DeJani on with us yesterday, and he brought up an article by Bill Barnwell of ESPN. Let's ask you this. At Blaine and Mickey on Twitter, you can answer us there. Call us, 615-737-1045. That's the Mark Spain Real Estate Hotline. This is what Bill Barnwell says. Possible trade for the Titans-Dolphins. He talks about the Titans going all in. I will say this. Derrick Henry is the best player you got. How much longer can one human being run for 2,000 yards every year? I mean, maybe he can do it longer than other people. but he can't do it forever.
No.
They don't last forever. So your window, I would think, is as long as your best player is playing his best. And that's happening right now. It's happening right now. This is what Bill Barnwell said, essentially, was go all in, get the disgruntled cornerback, Xavien Howard. He said the Titans should make a trade. They should get Xavien Howard and a 2022 second-round pick. Remember, they lost the 2022 second-rounder for Julio. They would get that one back, trade them your 2022 first-round pick, and then the Dolphins get your 2023 second-round pick. So you essentially swap second-rounders and a first-rounder for Xavien Howard. Where are you on that? Xavien Howard.
And I like Xavier Howard, by the way. Really good player. I don't like giving up a first rounder for a cornerback. I'd give up, you know, third or fourth or fifth or sixth. Maybe not for him, but for a quality player. My mindset's a little different, and I don't think you have to have elite cornerback to be successful in this league and go on a Super Bowl run. And I say that, let's look at Tampa Bay. Can you name one of them? I can't. Not the cornerbacks. I can name the safety, but I can't name the cornerback. But guess what I can name? Their front four that got after the quarterback. So I would approach this a little bit differently. I'd get a journeyman or, you know, someone that's available. I know they're talking about Fuller from the Denver Broncos now. Yeah. He was with the Bears. We do know the Fullers pretty well. They, you know, had one play here. They are related.
Oh, yeah, that's right. Uh-huh. Never so ending supply of Fullers.
If you want to give up a fifth or sixth, and I know JR likes a lot of, you know, those picks, but I would do something like that along those lines. I would have signed, which he's already signed now, I would have went after another pass rusher. I would have went after Whitley, Merciless.
Yeah. And you know him. You coached him.
I asked Coach Mack that, and Mack said, no, we need a corner. No, your corner's only as good as your pass rush. And guess what? Even if you have a really good corner, he's still going to get beat. So why get a, you know, trade for a corner unless you have pass rush? So I'm digging deep into that again in my rotation. And you knew him, and it wouldn't have got cost you a lot probably. I don't know. He wanted to go to a winner. So what does that say about the Titans and what he thinks of the Titans?
His former DC.
That.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Mike Vrabel.
He said that, yeah. So I kind of would have went maybe that route. I know they're in desperation time. But there's some, you know, I like the Maben moving. I move. That's a depth piece that knows your playbook. You had him last year during the COVID. So, and he's a quality, you know, sub player. So I wouldn't be panicking. I don't think they're in the move to quickly, but I would be thinking more pass rush.
Mm-hmm.
guess what? It also can give me more time, buy me more time for my big price offseason acquisition in Bud Dupree for rest and not take on the onus of trying to just get back out there being a competitor that he is sooner than later. Yeah. And it wouldn't cost him a lot. I'm sure he didn't. I mean, I don't know what he's saying. Went to Green Bay.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think he signed some mega long term. It might have been a 1 year deal. Maybe wrong on that, but yeah, I would have done something like that.
I said all off season, and I agree with you. I said this all off season. The key to me with how they do on defense has everything to do with the pass rush and how they affect the quarterback.
And the pass rush is doing well, but you still want another piece. Hey, man, that guy can play outside, inside. Or you can drop, another guy, move him inside. I mean, they're pieces to the puzzle. And you just, and I go sign another veteran type backup DB. They're out there.
Yeah.
Other things to take into note is, okay, does he know our scheme? How quickly can he pick it up if he doesn't? You know, how much do we know him? Have we worked with him on other staffs? Members of your staff work with him at other places. That all comes into play. But ultimately, his skill set is what you're looking for. And they have some guys they can move up to. So I don't think they're as pressed as most. But I might have been for one more pass rush. I know the pass rush looked good, but I want to continue to just go after that pass rush, man. I love that because in this passing league, you're not going to be able to shut down anybody. That's just a fact. So Xavier Howard, as much as I love him, I wouldn't give up a first-round pick for him.
You know his contract details? The contract member he doesn't like?
Well, he redid it, didn't they? They just redid it before in the training camp because he held out. What is he making, $16 million, I'm guessing?
This year, his cash amount is $13.7 million. His cap hit is right about 16, or it's 15-something.
Okay.
Here's what he makes $12 million this year. That's his base salary.
Then it jumps up.
So it's like, okay, when this works, somebody trades somebody to you, that team eats the dead cap hit, but then you get his salary, right, that person's salary going forward. So base salary next year, $12,975 for Xavier Howard. The next year, $11,400, and then the next year, $11,650. He's three more years under contract.
No, I don't think that's right. They redid. He held out. If he's making $12, $11 million, I think you put all your chips at the table. But they redid it. He held out in training camp, and they redid it, or I'm assuming they did because he came to camp.
Yeah, this is his current deal on SpotTrack. Oh. So however they redid it, this is how it landed.
Oh. Yeah, well, he's only making like $12
million. $12
million. And I have him in my top 10 cornerbacks.
$12 million. And it's the average of 12. You could just say.
Maybe my top five.
In 2022, he's going to make 13, but the next year he makes 11-4 and 11-6. So the average is about 12. $12 million. That's about the average.
I'm still not giving up a first round, but that is, I'm cool with that.
And the Fuller dude's done after this
but
year.
They didn't even go after Gilmore. So that tells you what they were thinking. Now, I know he was trying to get, $16 million or somewhere. He was up there. Man. But, defensive player of the year. So I get it.
Yeah.
But you were coming off an injury. And you're getting up there in age. So, they work with us and. They, he still hadn't hit the field yet with the Panthers. That's a good little deal there. $12 million for an elite corner?
Yeah.
Not bad. I just want to make sure he's happy.
And Fuller, remember, he had signed a deal with the Bears in like 2018. He got cut. So the Broncos signed him for 1 year. So you only have Fuller for the rest of this year. So he is the true definition. He would be a rental if you got him.
Yeah, and that's why I said fifth, sixth round pick.
Yeah.
You're not going to get Howard. I don't think they're thinking they need – a sense of urgency to get a cornerback at that price.
Yeah.
For a first round pick. No.
Wouldn't be surprised to see them make some kind of a move somewhere for a depth guy.
Oh, I wouldn't be surprised.
Yeah. Not a first round trade for a guy.
No.
But a depth guy for sure.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And there's some people out there, Blaine, who would be like, hey man, is he injured? No. Well, that's what we've been doing with first round picks. Drafting injured guys. Been signing big injured free agent contract, guys. Yeah. Oh, Xavier Howard, everything work on him? That's fine with
everything
me.
Work on
everything
him.
Work. Hey, man, run.
You act like he was a machine.
Yeah.
Does everything work?
Run. Let me see how you can run. Hey, everything works. He works. Oh, these work. Let's get him.
Ooh,
But, I mean, the bottom line is this. You still drafted Molden and Farley. Jackrabbit's under contract for another year. His cap hit next year, Jackrabbit.
He's under contract for another year?
It's a two-year deal. I looked. His cap hit next
year. It was a one-year deal.
No, it's two. And if you...
We got Jack and Rabbit on that one.
His contract next year is $10 million cap hit. And if you cut him, you still have a $3 million dead cap hit for him to not be on the team. It cost you $3 million for him to not be on the team.
Yeah, as I said before, there was a reason why he was out there. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, he got 2 year deal.
New Orleans, as much as he makes plays on the ball, he also gets flagged. And you go look up his history. Said that in the beginning. I wasn't a, you know, here's what I was thinking. He's not better than Malcolm Butler. No. You could say, oh, he's faster. He doesn't. No, he's not a better player. He's not. This that's what it is. So, you know. I thought he only signed like a 1 year, $7 million deal. So
it was
he
a
got two year, $14
million? It was a 2 year deal. I looked before we came on the air today out of sheer morbid curiosity. I thought, what's the deal with Jackrabbit?
Well, to his credit, though, he so far is the second best corner on the team behind Fulton. Second year player. But I mean, that's how desperate they are for cornerbacks, to your point, and they may make a trade. Yeah.
His base salary next year is $6 million. His cap hit is 10.2. If you cut him, you would save $7 million and have 3.2 in dead cap hit next year. He
not
signed
bad
a 2 year deal.
For number two. So yeah. They're getting a bargain.
Oh, no, that's good money for a number two, but just need that rascal to
be a little more consistent.
He's got to hold the end of the rope right now, especially. Mm-hmm. It's going to be. Well, I'll save this for the last segment. Just looking at the Bills chart, Kansas City's going to look a lot like what the Bills did against them. Like, there's going to be 12 guys that catch the ball. I mean, they're going to throw it to everybody. Yeah. Everybody's going to have anyway, we can get into that in the last segment. But let's get Doug Matthews next. We'll talk some Tennessee Vols and Alabama Crimson Tide next on Blaine and Mickey. Blaine and Mickey, 104.5 The Zone. Let's talk to Coach Doug Matthews. Coach, how in the world are you doing today? How are you?
I am doing well. Got a little rain here in Williamson County, and now the sun's out, so that means the new seed I put down. Well, actually, I had to put down. I don't put seed down myself. We'll be growing, and good day.
I'm actually the dude who put out my own, Coach. When you said that, I'm like, it's going to rain on the seed I put out. I love it.
No, I don't. I try to help the economy out by paying other people to do that now.
I appreciate it. I'm that dude who's going to always try to do it myself until I mess it up and have to call an expert.
I stopped all that when my grass was like, you know, the color of this mellow yellow right here.
Hey, Coach, one of these days I want this UT-Bama week to get everybody fired up like it used to. You know, once upon a time, you circled this game on the national calendar every year, and I know both fan bases still do, but let me ask you this. What is your favorite UT-Alabama memory? Because I know you've been a part of a few of these.
Well, I'll go to the ones that I coached in, because those are the ones, obviously, that are so much better. I've been to a bunch of, since I got out of coaching, been to a bunch of the games. Certainly the you know, once the game went still in Birmingham, you know, Peyton and Joey Kent starting that and off with the 80-yard touchdown pass. But my favorite, there'd probably be three. I was there when in 82 when the 11-game streak ended that Alabama had. Certainly that was big. But probably 1985 when Dale Jones made that interception. Tony Robinson, we'd gone up 16-0 and really playing well. We had a tremendous team. Well, that team ended up winning the Sugar Bowl, so obviously it's a tremendous team. But he got hurt, and we were kind of holding on, and Dale made a great play. That one, and then the other certainly would be the 2 years before 1983 when the score was tied 34-34 and Johnny Jones had that 66-yard touchdown run. Those were the two that really stick out. I was at the went to Tuscaloosa. You know, of course, we used to play all the games in Birmingham. Every game I coached in, coaching 10 of them, five of them were in Birmingham. I was at the five overtime game, whenever that was. But certainly the I'd say the 85 and the 83 clearly for me, no question.
Always love story time with Coach Doug Matthews. He joins us now courtesy of the Tennessee Highway Safety Office.
You know, let me just hit one thing for Tennessee fans out there. 1928. All right, let's go back to 1928.
Oh, okay.
That's when the Neyland legend and the Tennessee rivalry really started. General Neyland, that was his third year as head coach. Gene McEver, one of the greatest players ever to play at Tennessee, 98-yard kickoff return. Tennessee beat Alabama 15-13. And from that kind of set the tempo and put everything in place for General Neyland's great career up there, and was also, from a UT's perspective, the bedrock win that really got this rivalry kickstarted.
You know, Coach, when you're throwing around, you know, years like 1928 in a rivalry, that's some pretty deep-seated stuff. That's pretty good stuff.
Absolutely, and that's what this has been. You know, almost every coach that I've talked to involved in this rivalry, both sides, whether it be a head coach or an assistant coach, once you're there a while, this was, and I don't know if it still is, but it was such a great rivalry from a respect standpoint. You never, you know, even though you wanted to beat their brains in and vice versa, it was very respectful. I think a lot of that had to do because a lot of the coaches in this game were from Alabama's side. Were, you know, Coach Bryant was an Alabama graduate. John Majors and Philip Fulmer were Tennessee graduates. Bowden Wyatt. They understood the game from a player's perspective and a coaching perspective, and you know, for decades, it was a tremendous rivalry. It's not that now, for a couple of reasons. Once we went to divisional play, you know, Florida and Georgia became probably more important. So for younger fans, probably Georgia or Florida would be maybe the main rival. But you go back before that, folks of my era and a little bit before and certainly a little bit after, Alabama was the game. And, you know, you all were talking about that. When I remember when I was in high school reading and hearing about the third Saturday in October, that was kind of like the, you know, the Thanksgiving Day games of other places. So it was a great rivalry. I hope that it can get back to being a rivalry on the field. It has not been for many years now. Hopefully Tennessee's heading back that direction. But it's a very respected rivalry, and there's a lot of players interacted, a lot of coaches and players that interacted over the years through that. Some good friends of mine are former Alabama coaches and Alabama players.
Good history lesson here from Coach Doug Matthews, brought to you by Tennessee Highway Safety Office. If you put down some drinks, put down your keys. Remember, fans don't let fans drive drunk. Brought to you by the Tennessee Highway Safety Office.
Yeah, Coach, before we get into the Ole Miss, let's continue the talk of Bama and what would be the recipe to beat Bama with the UT system that they run on offense and defense. You know, they've shown that they can be run against as well.
Yep. Blaine, you know, now I'm talking now as a fan. Now, if I was a coach up there, I would certainly feel like we would have an opportunity to beat them. Mm-hmm. You know, I think that's the only way a player or a coach, if they're worth their salt, has to look at it. And there are ways of winning the game. I would say, though, that Tennessee, the likelihood of them winning this game is almost nil. Now, there's the other side of it, too. Alabama could lose it. If they go out and play sloppily, throw interceptions, lay the ball on the ground, don't think that's going to happen. But, you know, from Coach Heupel's perspective, one of the things that I've been really discussing a lot on Big Horn Sunday, he is just now in the infant stage of building a program. Nick Saban has been at Alabama for 15 years. He clearly has a great program built. So I think what Coach Heupel's got to look at, he's going to have to make this decision first. He's got probably four or five guys, key players that are beat up, somewhat injured, that probably could play. He's got an open date next week. And then, you know, he got Kentucky and Georgia. He's going to play with the week in between the three best teams in the Southeastern Conference record-wise. Alabama, Georgia, and Kentucky. So how he's going to approach it, I don't know. You know, he's got a quarterback that is going to be limited going up against an outstanding pressure defense. Alabama defensively pressures teams, and when I say pressure, brings linebackers and defensive backs better than any other team over the past 4 or 5 years that I've seen. Our offensive line is depleted now. Is he going to play Cade Mays? Is he going to play Cooper Mays? Is he going to play Evans? You know, don't know. But those are decisions that he'll have to make. So, you know, you want to be competitive, but you also, I think, got to be realistic. Now, I'm not sure he looks at it like that, but that's kind of the way I look at it.
Right, and that's what I want you to take us in on, how you, when you were coaching, how do you come up with the decision and how would you play this out with knowing you have a bye week and some banged up guys? Would you risk playing it, or would you look at it and say, okay, I'm going to play some backups and I'm going to get some guys and see if they can develop and see what they can do against Alabama? How would you approach it?
Well, I was never a head coach, of course, so I didn't have to make that decision. But I think the way that I would do it, and I think the way that he'll do it, hey, you're going to go out there with your best players. And now if they just absolutely cannot play, or if there is, if you have a trainer or a medical person tell you that, you know, if they play, the chances of getting injured further are this, then you certainly are going to listen to that. But I think from as competitive as Josh Heupel is, you know, you don't win national championships as a starting quarterback at Oklahoma, believe me, without being competitive. I think he'll go out there and give the best shot he has. And there's some things, listen, offensively, Alabama defensively, secondary that's the least best part of their defense. Right, I put it like that. It's not poor defense, but this team, offensive team at Tennessee, shown that they can complete deep passes, and I think they will do that. Defensively, they've been playing well. I thought they had as good an effort last week. You know, holding an Ole Miss team, which was one of the highest scoring in the country, much less the Southeastern Conference, to really only 24 points. You know, they're playing very solid there. So I would suspect he's going to, again, if the trainer tells him he can play, I think he'll play him. If they tell him that they shouldn't play, obviously he won't play him.
Well, let's go to the Ole Miss game. And I guess outside of the refereeing, which you never make an excuse as a player, as a coach, but why did they lose the game? What key, you know, plays were the factor of losing this game?
Well, I think going into any SEC game, particularly for Tennessee this year, if you can get a game into the fourth quarter, and of course they've had two where the game was over in the fourth quarter because of wins, that's what you're looking to do. And Tennessee had an opportunity. Listen, Ole Miss did not score a touchdown. They only scored one touchdown in the second half. They didn't score any in the fourth quarter. Tennessee had two really good opportunities, down 5 points, to score. And if they score, they're going to win the game. We're not able to do that. But, you know, you go right down, what more could you ask for than to have an opportunity on the last play of the game to be able to win the game? That's kind of where what you expect in a Southeastern Conference game, quite frankly. Blowouts one way or the other in SEC games are rare. And they had an opportunity to do it. I think they played really well defensively. Just think about this, Blaine. I don't know what the most snaps you ever played. Maybe you don't even know. But some of these defensive players, four of their five defensive backs, played 101 snaps in this game.
Oh, that definitely did that in the NFL.
In a game?
Yep. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's what happened when you go Eddie left, Eddie right, Eddie left, and then you punt. Then that's how you get that.
Well,
that was early in my career.
But they, you know, they had a lot of things. They come out of this game, you know, Ole Miss played. Listen, Ole Miss defensively played well. And Tennessee's defensive played well. 31-26 in a game that a lot of people thought would be a 45-42 ball game. You know, defensively played pretty darn well. Really did.
Well, I have to ask you this last question. I don't even know if you know the answer. And that is there any way that you could make some rule to prevent some of these fake cramping type injuries or put in place to keep from a player from coming back sooner than later? I mean, how would you approach this in the off season if you're trying to address this, that make it a little more even playing field, you know, to both sides of the ball?
Well, those discussions have been ongoing because everybody sees now the way that with these fast-paced offenses that this is going to be needed. Here's what I think will happen. Of course, Tom Ritter's on the Saturday show, and Tom is on all these committees. Todd Berry, the executive director of the American Football Coach Association, they are all in discussions about this. Blaine, I think what it's going to end up, Mickey, what it's going to end up being something like this. They will say, okay, if we have to stop the game for you to come off the field. Now, if you go off on your own power, no problem. But if we have to stop the game, if medical people have to come out there, then you're going to have to set out that entire series before you can come back. I think that's what they will get to. The reason that it's so difficult for an official to say, hey, you're flopping.
Right.
Well, what if they're not flopping? You know, what if they are injured and the next play they get more injured? So the league, the Southeastern Conference, other conferences are not going to let officials do that, but they can put that rule in, which I think is a realistic rule. You go out, if we have to come out and get you, you're going to set out that series. You know, if you have a couple of guys do that, all of a sudden now you're down to a couple of your starters are out. But that would be the only way I think they can do it. Let me say this, though. You're going to continue seeing that happen. You're not going to see that end until they do something like that. And you know what? If I was a defensive coordinator, if I was a defensive play caller, I'd use that puppy every time I thought
it
could.
All the time. All the time. Yeah, no doubt about it. I guess
it's not against the rules. That's right, the big thing. It's not against the rules.
Real quickly, is Matt Corral on your top three list for Heisman?
I said on Sunday's show, I have watched, coached against, and watched 10 different Heisman Trophy winners play in Neyland Stadium. All right. He put on the most impressive performance of any visiting player, not talking about Tennessee player, that I personally have ever seen. That includes Baker Mayfield. That includes Bo Jackson. That includes Herschel Walker and several other players. Dan Marino didn't win the Heisman Trophy, but he put on a show there. I've never seen a young man do what he did. I was tremendously impressed with him. You know, 30 carries. Now, some of that included sacks. 30 carries. And to the last play of the game for him, he was running, trying to pick up a first and 10 that would win the game. Greatly impressed with him.
Yeah, no question about it, because he was out. You know, two of his best receivers didn't even play. So, yeah, that was pretty impressive to find another way to win the game, and that was to use his legs like that. We're on with the coach, Doug Matthews.
Coach, I know we talk a lot of ball with you. Before we go, I just – do you have any thoughts on what might happen or what might happen down the road with a potential settlement with Jeremy Pruitt's law team? You know, they sent the letter and said, we're going to release a bunch more ugly stuff about a bunch of people if y'all don't settle with us. You got any kind of gut feeling on what might happen there?
No. Well, yes, I have a gut feeling. I thought at one point that, now this was 4 or 5 months ago, that Tennessee likely would settle. From everything I'm hearing from people in the room up there, I think this chancellor has basically said, we're not going to pay him a penny. And I think most Tennessee fans, and even non-Tennessee fans, know this. The lawyer coming out and saying something like that, and made it sound like what tell, you know, anybody that know. And I was really impressed that Rick Barnes quickly got out a letter on saying, hey, bring, you know, how can a guy that I knew up there throw this stuff out there about our basketball program?
Right.
I don't think there's anything at all to it. Do I think that there's some more things that the NCAA violations that occurred? Yeah, I do. But I tell you what, they were caused by Jeremy Pruitt, nobody else. So I don't think there's anything to this. So I don't think much will come to it. But it, you know, a little surprising from that standpoint. But I guess in other ways, maybe not. But don't think there's much to it. And again, I could very well be wrong on this. I believe if he's going to get any money out of Tennessee, he is indeed going to have to go to court. I don't think Tennessee's going to settle for one penny on this. I really don't.
Oh, wow. Coach, thank you for the time. People, again, you referenced the other shows, Football Saturday, Big Orange Sunday. We're like the appetizer for the two main courses over the weekend, Coach. Thanks for the time, as always.
I'm hungry.
Always love talking to you.
Good enough. Talk to you all next week.
Yes, sir. Tennessee Highway Bye-bye. Safety Office putting Coach Doug Matthews on the air. When we come back, who didn't practice today for the Titans? We got that. Also, I got interested maybe what this game might look like on Sunday from a Mahomes perspective, and I got a couple of numbers I can share with you. It's Blaine and Mickey, 104.5. This is
Mahomes.
Blaine and Mickey, 104.5, The Zone. This is from our buddy John Glennon from Sports Illustrated covering the Titans. JG says, not spotted during the open portion of practice. That's like the first 10 minutes when they stretch and do things like that. Brett Kern.
Whoa. We just cut the punter. He wasn't there?
He better get back.
Oh.
The other guy's not here anymore. There's nobody to punt.
Who's the emergency punter?
For a while, I think Cam Batson was the emergency quarterback. We know we don't have that anymore.
May still be in town at the apartment complex over there. They built over there. Nice one over there.
Oh, you think he's quarantined over there in an apartment complex?
Yeah, don't leave real soon. We just hold on a sec.
Well, if Kern needs a place punting, like come over and punt in the common area.
Like high school football, it's your best athlete is the punter, and he just takes off if he has to.
Kern, there was a time where like the best players on a team were Delanie Walker and Jarrell and Kern. And then Delanie, you know, his career kind of wore down with injuries and Jarrell got traded away. Kern has been the MVP, the MV punter. That dude's a weapon. So I hope this COVID thing gets well and he gets well, but he wasn't spotted at practice. A.J. Brown not spotted to practice.
Oh, my gosh.
Derrick Henry, King gets to rest.
Oh, I'm not worried.
You were like, hey, man, fan him, feed him grapes. He doesn't need to practice. Monty Rice, Taylor Lewan, who's in a concussion protocol. Chester Rogers, returning to practice.
Chester Rogers wasn't practicing. I like key components. Maybe they were giving him a rest day.
Could be.
I
made a note from yesterday. What was on the injury list?
He wasn't on there.
Chester Rogers was on there, didn't practice Wednesday as G to the Rizoin, his groin.
Oh.
Groins. Yeah. It all goes back to groins.
All these muscle strains, they not stretching their groin.
Well, you're our abductus lungus expert, which is part of the groinal region. Do you need to go down there and teach some kind of groin maintenance class? You need to go down there and teach some kind of groin maintenance class?
I didn't tear my abductus lungus till I was a senior, a 10-year guy.
My count's a senior.
So then as you get up in your mid-30s, they start saying, uh-oh.
All right, you want good news?
Man, that was not, besides Henry, man, I think I need some electronical stem right now. It just tightened up. My neck just went like, and I felt my shoulders pull up. I got nervous. Okay. I'm going to have all their weapons around. Lawan.
Imagine.
He got a concussion, though.
He did get a concussion. He can't fight through a concussion, but you can
a knee injury.
This is a short week, too, so I wouldn't be too excited about this. Okay, here I have good news, though, if you want the good news. Returning to practice, Julio Jones.
Okay, but A.J. Brown wasn't. So we can't get them on the field together in no time.
Apparently, there's like some. They're the magnet, like the parts of the magnets that repel each other instead of attract. So Julio Jones returned. Bullock, the kicker who had hurt his shoulder.
Oh, Keith Bullock.
No, unfortunately, the other Bullock, Randy. McNichols came back. That's super good news. And this is good news. Chris Jackson. Chris Jackson is back.
Oh, well.
Action Jackson.
Yeah, well, he had to be back because he did.
Hey, man,
did
if there's nobody else, you better get back.
Yeah, I think you're all right. Man, you can fight through all that. I wouldn't say just jog around, but just be ready on Sunday. I need all hands, men, legs, feet on deck versus my homies and crew.
All groins on deck.
Yeah, you better make sure you get some electronical stem to the groin.
You can't hook that thing up down there, though, can you? You said you put it everywhere.
Yeah, on your inner thigh?
Yeah.
Oh, absolutely.
I don't want electric current.
That electric current. No. Don't let it get too close. That's the key.
Yeah.
Yes, unfortunately, you know, you got to make sure you shave around that area.
No,
I'm talking about on your leg because if not, those sticky things are going to hurt. So this FYI, you know.
What's Blaine doing after practice? So is it her shaving his inner thighs to get his?
Quietly as this camp, you get to find all the truths today. I would shave up to my shin because I got tired of my hair getting pulled off on my
calf, shin area.
Down to your shin?
No, I would shave
for your tape and stuff.
For the tape, yeah. Getting your ankles taped. Okay. I got, man, dang, this stuff hurts. And then they put it on there like plaster. Then it was like, I can't even get it off.
Plaster.
Yeah.
Plaster, all right.
Yeah, yeah, plaster, man. You do a lot of things you never thought you would do.
Boy, I know,
and it looked really weird. I'm shaved up to, you know, to my calf. And then I got hair all over my knee. I was like, I might as well just shave it all the way up. Good Lord. That looked horrible in shorts, okay. Man.
Let's quickly pivot here. Pivot.
Pivot from shaving growing.
So, yes. Yes. Yes, it's people getting picked up at school right now.
People
asking
don't know
questions.
What really goes on behind the scenes.
I know. Anything to play. Shave groins. So, Patrick Mahomes, I keep thinking he's going to throw it to everybody. I looked against Washington last week. 8 different guys caught a pass. It's going to look like, a lot like Josh Allen in Buffalo. 9 different guys caught a pass in that game.
Well, as long as it looks like Buffalo and we win, I'm good. Just don't take us down to the goal line, though.
No big plays. Yeah. No big plays.
Oh, I don't know if they can even do that. Even a lot of teams are having issues with that because all the balls thrown all over the place.
Yep.
That's why I said I'm going after another passer. So we're just going to be rotating them dudes in. Man.
We got to rotate out. Lucas says the clock is running out and it's time for 3HL next right here on 104.5 The Zone. So stay tuned and they'll get you the rest of the way home. Yeah, it's time to shave. We'll see you. Happy Thursday and
peace.